personally don't. I personally haven't decided on anything. And it's funny because we see them, like, the more with all of our clients in all the different areas, the more remote the destination, the more packed quicker that they get. Because we've got some that are booked for summer, like they have nothing.
Yeah, I booked a trip for Florida actually in July. So I am planning on going to Florida and spending a couple days there, but I wanted to do some international travel this year, but I really don't think that's going to happen for me. So right. Might be on hold for another year.
I think we'll spend a bit more time in South Carolina. We were there for spring break a few weeks ago, which was great. And at the beaches there, and then South Carolina in the summer, Scotland in July, work trip. Nice. And, you know, then conference season is going to be here before we know it. Fellas.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of traveling this year with conferences. That's cool. Back in action.
That's funny you say Scotland. That was on my list of places to go this year. And it's just going to, it's going to have to take a back seat, but I've got some of my family heritage is over in Scotland. So I'm quite proud of that.
Nice.
So I want to visit and explore and also drink some scotch for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All I can say is definitely do the Highlands tours. That is some of the most unbelievable sights that you didn't even think were on this earth. So that's my recommendation when you go.
Yeah. Smart. I love that.
I am on a completely different topic, shifting gears real quick. I watched a documentary the other day on Netflix, Coded Bias. Did any of you watch this by chance?
You were talking about this, but I have not watched it yet.
Yeah.
No.
It basically, long story short, it was about how algorithms were being developed, right? And how these algorithms were biased. So we're talking about facial recognition software. Well, this facial recognition software was able to recognize people, but the bias was that it was not favoring or able to recognize to a certain percentage African-American, white, or black males. So, really? Or females. So the problem was, is that the software wasn't completely accurate across races and genders. So that led to why facial recognition software is now banned in a few states. You can't use it. So there's this whole path of like how these algorithms that we are reliant upon and put trust in, and the even algorithms that decide college applicants and decide who Amazon hires are coded with bias in them, unintentionally, of course, but they're coded with that bias. So it's that's why, like, we're seeing all this legislation and stuff going on, and it's just interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Definitely recommend watching it just for another eye opening.
Really interesting about the interview process, right? There's a lot of companies that are trying to provide smart tools.
Yeah.
Either, you know, and the goal, which is really interesting, you're sort of trading one bias for another. Part of the goal is to remove any interaction early where the interviewer could see and could make a decision based on racial bias or like knowing your ethnicity, mm-hmm. and removing that from the process and sort of controlling for it. So even if you're doing video interviews, making sure that, you know, it turns into an audio versus a video interview so that you can't see the other person, to try and remove that bias. But it's hard for these systems to, you're really swapping one for another.
All right.
Yeah. Well, and there's still a human element into it too. If you think about it, the people that are actually making the algorithms, I don't know if that adds to it, Paul, or if they even touched on that at all.
Yeah.
I would imagine that there would be, it's like, it's almost something that you just can't escape. And even, talking about like voice calls and stuff like that, I feel like we still gather information. We were talking about this a little bit before, you know, we still gather information subconsciously about, you know, how we view a person just based off their voice. So that's an interesting, interesting thought.
Uh-oh.
I completely remove bias, you know.
Have you seen, this sort of reminds me a little bit of Black Mirror. Have you guys watched that?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we've talked about that a couple times.
Yeah, that's one of those looking into the future kind of deals, and where is it going, and what could it be, you know, if we don't have legislation, or if and that reminded me of, I'm glad you said that, because in that documentary they were talking about how China is using facial recognition software, and they're being upfront about it, and I forgot exactly what was going on, but it was a matter of keeping dibs on people,
yeah,
and what wow. they're doing. And it was, you know, it's kind of like a, yeah, we're doing that now, but we're not being as upfront about it as the Chinese government. So I don't know. It's just very interesting how we're still in the infantile stages of the internet, you know, and technology. And it's mm-hmm. just going to keep growing.
Yeah. Yeah. I will be honest with you guys. The Black Mirror show really does scare me. it really does. Like yeah, more than a true classic horror film. Like it really does.
Yeah. It sticks with you. The only one that I haven't seen all of them, but the one that sticks with me is where the woman is trying to get to a friend's wedding and
yes.
the algorithm, you know, her score keeps getting deducted, so she can't get a plane ticket. And then something goes wrong, so she loses. She gets demerited again, so now she can't get a rental car. And it's just brutal.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, that's yeah. like my worst nightmare right there.
And that one's very relatable to, you know, social recognition, like likes and shares and stuff like that. That's like, you know, if you have a Instagram account or a TikTok and you've got followers, then you're trying to grow that fan base and make people happy so they hit that like button. And that's exactly it. But in the real world scenario, where if you don't get enough likes, then you're punished.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like it sort of has turned into a form of currency. It really has.
Right.
So I mean, it's quite prominent. So,
but anyway, guys, you hear a new voice on the call today. I'm Paul Hanick. I'm the marketing director for Intercoastal Net Designs.
And I am David Thompson. I am the director of social media. And welcome to our podcast. And we do have a new voice. Paul, why don't you introduce our new voice?
New voice is Jeremy Gall from Jeremy, I'll let you do your introduction and tell us about yourself and who you are.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I'm Jeremy Gall. I'm the founder and CEO of Breezeway. Vacation rental veteran, apparently, in the industry for a bit. Started a company called FlipKey back in 2006, and started Breezeway 10 years later, focused on property operations and sort of helping operators meet guest expectations in the way that they communicate and prepare their property for a fantastic experience.
Your focus is on pleasing the guest. Is that right?
That's right. And how operate, I think that's a great way to put it, but how operations can help you please the guest. How do you really control your product and your product experience so that you can please the guest?
Right. Exactly. And that's tough to manage. You know, I came from a background working in-house at a vacation rental company. And you know, there's so many moving parts to that. And I was always screaming, automation, let's figure out a way to do this better. And you know, the options were, I guess, limited would be the right word. So, I think Breezeway does bridge that gap. So we'll talk about that more in a bit, but welcome, Jeremy. Thank you for coming on and talking with us. First question though, what's your favorite ice cream?
Yeah, I'm like a mint Oreo guy, or maybe take Oreo, mix it with some coffee, and I'm on board.
Nice.
The mixing, yeah, that's a good.
I didn't even think about that. Honestly, I didn't think like.
A whole new world.
You want me to start singing?
Yeah, right.
Maybe I'm lazy. I also I'll default to the milkshake often instead of the ice cream cone.
Oh, I like that. So, you know, but with the technology and with like the past 5 years, think about this, like where have we gone and what have you been able to like kind of see with Breezeway and with the vacation rental industry? You know, we've grown and I always kind of say we've been a little bit behind hotels in a sense, technology wise, but we're really getting right up there. So give me your like past 5 year overview of where we've been, and then what has helped in creating Breezeway.
Yeah, I think where we've been the past 5 years, you know, I think you have to take the last 12 months as just its own segment of time during the pandemic, and you slice that off, and we talk about that later. But I think the 4 years prior to that, I think they're just part of a continuation in sort of the story of vacation rentals. It's an old industry. We know it's been around for a long time, and it's continuing to adapt. And I think the vacation rental industry moves along very well, responsive to the market and what guests are interested in. And we've seen that just continue over the last couple of years, right? Where like people are more interested in a higher level of service, a higher level of quality, a little bit more of a predictable experience at the property, not bringing their own sheets, knowing that there's going to be toiletries and toilet paper that, you know, it's just like, I think it's just, there's been some changes there that are just part of an evolution that have continued. And I think the industry embraces, I think vacation rental managers, responsible operators deserve credit for leveraging technology to help them accomplish that. They really do. Like it's, you know, we can say they're kind of behind hotels, but at the same time, they're really, these are independent businesses who have really sought out solutions for their problems in a complex business that they run.
Yeah. Yep. Spot on. Yeah, definitely. I'm glad there's a couple of points in there. I guess repeatability and what the guest expects, I think are some of the biggest hurdles with, you know, with the shift to vacation rentals over the past year, you know, people wanting those private homes and you know, not staying in hotels as much. Those expectations are a little bit on the hotelier side, where as you mentioned, you know, make sure there's linens and toiletries and stuff like that. And I think that is a huge shift that we're going to be looking forward to. But I wanted to ask you, like, how does what does Breezeway do to help with the overall operations? Like, dumb it down for us. Like, definitely dumb it down for us.
I mean, I think it's just at base. You sort of mentioned this a little bit that there's just there's a lot of work that goes into preparing and maintaining the product that we're providing, you know, to our clients, right?
Like,
the product that you want to provide to your guest is this great experience at a unique property in usually, you know, a beautiful, the location is part of the charm or a big, you know, a massive part of the experience. And so, you know, there's just so much work that goes into that, from cleaning to inspections and maintenance. And what we try to do is help people accomplish that big body of work, which is like, how do you take care of the home? How do you make sure it's ready? How do you have a brand standard that you can apply across unique properties? I'm trying to dumb it down, but it, you know, it's a lot of work. I think, you know, the audience and you guys understand there's just a lot of operational work where you're touching the property to make sure you can deliver, number one, like really good stay and a good experience to the guest. And number two, like the right asset management to the homeowner. And I think one of the things that's happened over the last few years is that both parts of that are so important, right? Like, I think the OTAs have gained in they've gained and continued to gain in market share. They've continued to gain in awareness. And between that and then the work that you guys do with helping people do the marketing on their own site to get bookings directly and to distribute their properties, like, managers have really good marketing solutions. Like, the front office part of the business is solid. Doesn't mean it's easy, and you got to maintain and watch your marketing budgets and understand what's working for you, et cetera. But now it's how do you match all that on the back office side?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to jump into, and you touched on something that I wanted to bring up. It seems like there's a lot of focus on the experience as far as like, or touch points with the person that's actually coming to stay at the property and making that experience good. But I feel like, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe a forgotten touch point is the one with the owner. And so that might be a bridge that you guys create that alleviates some pain points for vacation rental managers.
Yeah, we're working on that. I think we're starting to do a better job on that. We've definitely tried to help our clients focus on both. Yeah. And at the moment for the owner, it's still a little bit, what's the owner's experience? So one, you know, a cool thing that a lot of our customers do is they talk to the owners about what's important to them. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. this is a cool tip. Like, you're onboarding a new owner or you're rolling out a tool like Breezeway or however you're running your operation, and you say to your owners, like, hey, you know, what's the five things when you show up at your property that are super important to you? You want the lights on, the shades open, the bed's made a certain way. Like, what do you want it to look like so that this feels and you understand that we care about your property and we prepared it for you? And then they take those and they mix them into their regular brand standard of cleaning and inspection and everything else they do. But they make sure they can execute on that. And then it changes the relationship with the owner, because the owner's like, wow, this is like, these people are paying attention. This is my property manager. They care about my property. They care about me. Yeah, and I think that's so critical, because, you know, right or wrong, there's a fallacy among homeowners that marketing their property is easy and that they could just go and do it themselves. And we all know that that's not the case, that it's really hard, but they don't totally know that.
So, you know, all this being said, all these issues that we have, and with both guest communication and you even said execution. Executions, we can talk all day, but the execution part's hard. So, like, tell me, like, how Breezeway works in general for that execution part and the communication part. Like, why should a property manager invest in Breezeway?
Yeah, it's a great question. The execution is critical, right? And so I think execution is, you know, the way that most people are doing it now is a pretty manual process. And there's just a lot of points of failure.
Right.
And so the more you can eliminate those, the better you can be. And I think execution comes down to, you know, a whole host of things, like, how do you train your team to know what you actually want them to do? Depending on your market, you might have a high percentage of seasonal staff, so you're retraining folks, or you have high turnover, so you're retraining folks mm-hmm. all the time, or you have a mix of in-house and third-party contractors, and you really want them to be trained, but then you also want to validate the work that's happening. And so we help folks do that through pretty detailed checklists that can be done just in the course of your regular work. But execution is also around, like, how do you schedule that work? How do you continue to maintain that schedule between a super busy Saturday where you've got 90% back-to-backs and you've got a major execution problem? And so we dig in and we help people there. And then communication is split into two, which is, you know, your internal team, how to communicate with your internal team. The typical manager will sort of, maybe they're using a group chat or WhatsApp or something just to, like, get everybody on the same page. But then somebody writes in, they're late for their cleaning, or the cleaning is going to take longer. It's really hard to tie that back to the task. So we help them do that in a much better way. And then it's about communication to the guest, which, you know, we could talk about for a long time. Because I think that's something that's rapidly changing in the industry. But, you know, I think guests want, we're human beings, right? Like we gravitate to box stores and we go into a grocery store and it's laid out the same way because we want some level of predictability.
Yeah.
And in our experiences. And I think, you know, the holy grail for vacation rentals and what people are focused on and what they're, what I think the industry is, I think guests are moving this way. And I think the industry is moving with them to, we want to deliver the right level of a predictable experience in a unique, authentic home and property. And that's like the holy grail. That's like,
I like that. Yeah.
That's what we all want, right? Like that's an amazing, imagine that's what you get when you go on vacation and that feels awesome. You're like, wow, this is great. I'm not worried about anything. Everything's dialed in. And yet I'm in this unique place that's all my own, that I can make my own and make my own experience. And like, that's what people want. And I think the industry is well aware of that and is moving towards that. But communication is part of that too, right? How you communicate to the guest right before arrival, right after arrival, during the stay, about problems or issues or questions, just questions. These are huge. Some of these are huge homes, right?
Right.
You might not know how to use everything. How do you use a hot tub? How do you, any tricks to the fireplace? What's going on with the stove? You know, things like that.
Yeah, that's so crucial. And it's so interesting that it's the hardest part, I think, is that actual bridge between that stay that you want to make sure is the same across all your properties and the same for your brand, but you have to make it unique. And we get questions all the time from our property managers that, what can I do to make this, to go above and beyond, you know, what can I do to make sure that the guest remembers us? It's like one of those, you don't want to have to do a basket of goodies in every property every time. Well, that's a great thing. There are still plenty of other things a property manager can do to keep the guest on their radar, you know, and keep them in mind for their next stay.
Yeah. And
with I think that's the gap that really Breezeway is probably going to be the best at, you know.
Yeah.
That stuff.
That psychology of the stay is really, you know, you talk about like the psychology of like coded bias on Netflix or algorithms, like the psychology of the stay, I think, is really fascinating. And you know, you mentioned now, like, you know, the basket of goodies, and, you know, I remember we stayed with the Parrish Collection in Hawaii, and it was a really nice property and a high-end property because it was our honeymoon. But, you know, they have somebody there waiting just to show you around the property. There's a basket of goodies. There's like drinks that are ready to go, you know, that level of handholding. And you remember, and I remember it. I won't forget it. Like, I remember that part of the experience. And it's the same thing. You know, you show up at a hotel and they put something in your room, you know, or you typically will remember that. And I just heard a good tip at our Elevate conference last month from Amber Carpenter at Acme House, talking about the psychology of the stay and when people are leaving and not forgetting, you know, to think about your checkout experience and change the checkout experience from like a chore list, you know, a list of chores, to hey, let's leave you on a high note here. Like, here's something for your road trip home, or here's something on the way out, like brand recognition on the way out, rather than, you know, pack up the sheets, run the dishwasher. You got this whole list of stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like the picture that you get after you ride like a ride at some theme park or something like that, you know, something to remember it by.
Those are always bad. Those pictures are always bad. Nobody buys those. They're terrible.
So I've got a question. So let's back up just a little bit. What actually got you interested in the vacation rental industry as a whole? Was it some sort of experience, or what sort of started that journey?
Yeah, we were interested in how people were using, there was a concept about like social commerce, the sharing economy. I don't think nobody really talks about that anymore. I think people figured out like that's it's a misclassification of what we're doing or what even Airbnb is doing or Uber is doing or anybody's doing. Like, that's not really the sharing economy. You're not really sharing your car. It's just transactional. But in 2005, 2006, people were talking about it that way. And we were thinking about how people use their real estate assets and how that asset was used and could it be more efficient. And as part of that exploration, I jumped in the car and I drove from Boston to Virginia to go to the Eastern VRMA conference. And, it was really eye-opening. And the whole way back, I talked with TJ and we just kept talking about, this is a market where there's a lot of work that can be done. There's going to be a ton of growth. There's going to be a ton of brand growth. And there's just a lot of work that can be done to help people from a technology perspective. And that was it. And then we started talking to some managers and really fell in love with their business and them as individuals, like great people. And the rest was, that was it.
You ever have a problem with scalability? A property manager that wants to do all this stuff, but they have 300 to 500 properties, and how am I going to do this for every single one of my properties with my staff that has to do a turnover on, or all my cleaning crew that has to do a turnover on Saturdays? I think that's a big, quite a big issue for a lot of property managers.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. I think it's really fascinating though, right? Like, you'll hear, property managers talk about from a scalability perspective, different sort of milestones, I think, as far as inventory, right?
Right.
Where you might get up to 150 properties and then that's really where you want to stay, and you'll be adding units, maybe dropping some of your poor performing homes. And then if you jump up from there, you're really hitting like another level of scale.
Yeah. There's always that cusp, right? That time where you have to switch gears.
Yeah. I think it's very challenging. I think it's just like, I'm sure you guys see this at IC&D, any growing business, you take those problems as they come, and then they feel really heavy in retrospect, but you just sort of grew into them and you're like, okay, well, I grew into this. I think the issue with vacation rental managers is the challenge that I think many of them do meet very well, but it's a constant issue, is they have to be very reactionary to the market. Mm-hmm. And they have to continually be thinking about their business and how they're going to adapt and how they're going to adapt with the tools that they're using.
Yeah, very true.
What on that note, as far as like adaptability and stuff like that, I mean, what do you think has been the biggest hurdle for them in the past year? What would you say has been the biggest hurdle for vacation rental managers and having to adapt?
Well, I think whiplash.
That's a good one. Yeah.
One word, I would say whiplash. I think that, they've had to go back and forth. It's been so unpredictable that, it's just very challenging to have your business, put on hold and then bring it back very, very quickly and then have an extent, the most managers, and there were some in different locations, Hawaii, some of the mountain destinations where they didn't quite have this, mm-hmm. but a lot of other destinations did, where, they were on hold, they came roaring back. Then because people weren't back in school, the shoulder season was extended, didn't really have a major off season, they're right back into it, and they haven't been able to change anything. And it's been so unpredictable that they can't really, it's hard to invest and make changes to the business. Yeah. So they're still just like holding on, they're riding along and they're holding on. And I think that's just super, super hard for them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, let's switch gears and do some fun stuff. Stretch our legs for a bit.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, Jeremy. We've been kind of like drilling you here. Just question after question.
Yeah. Let's just do. What's your personal background? Like, well before FlipKey. Why vacation rentals? Would be one, but. Like, where'd you grow up? Give us some about who you are. Really, a company is defined by their leadership. So give us your way back when story, man.
Yeah. I grew up in Connecticut, in a small town in the northwest corner of Connecticut. We had a small, like, I guess they're called hobby farms now. We didn't think about it then, but lots of animals, pigs, chickens, stuff like that.
Ah, cool. Okay.
Which was really cool. And my father was an architect. My mom was a school teacher. And got an older brother, just the two of us. And, then I got the travel bug pretty early. I studied abroad in college. I then moved to Europe. I lived in England and Italy on two different farms for quite some time. I was a lumberjack and a farmer, which was an awesome experience. Went to law school, studied abroad again in law school because I love travel. And so that was sort of the bug that kept me going, which is why, which was part of the attraction to vacation rentals in the travel industry to begin with. I guess in between that, I was a corporate lawyer for 5 years. That was pretty rough. I knew I didn't want to do that. I knew I didn't want to do that.
Did you start your business, like start FlipKey after that?
Yeah, no, I took some, I stopped. I took about a year off. I stopped at work as a corporate lawyer and, the real story is I was working at a firm in Boston that handled high tech venture funds and those venture funds like portfolio companies.
Oh, okay. So
a lot of those portfolio companies were my clients. And in right after college, I moved to San Francisco. I lived there for a little bit and sort of was oblivious to the technology wave that was happening all around me in 1996. And then when it came roaring back again in 2000, when it was coming back again in 2005, I was just thinking to myself, like, look, all the folks on the other side of the table who are involved in technology are having so much more fun than I am. And I want to switch gears. So I spent that year thinking about what I wanted to do, who I wanted to work with, opportunities, and tried a whole bunch of different stuff before settling with TJ on FlipKey.
Gotcha.
Nice. I've got a question, both personal and vacation rental related. What's your biggest pet peeve in both arenas? Maybe they overlap. Nice. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I guess good question. Biggest pet peeve. I think for vacation rentals, the biggest pet peeve is a hard one. It is, I like to, this is a great industry and, I just like to have genuine relationships with the folks that we're working with, both partners and clients. And I think that I like to, and I think people would back this up, that, my approach with folks is to be very straightforward. And I think that in business, there you can always be setting up a relationship where it's a win-win on both sides. And I just like to have that open ability to do that. And folks that operate in a different way, that's frustrating. That can be extremely frustrating.
Yeah, because you can't reach that goal. Like, you can't be transparent. You can't actually communicate. So communication breakdown then.
Yeah, exactly. That lack of transparency,
yeah.
Whether between, as a client, what they're trying to achieve as an objective, which I think rarely happens, or a partner, or, somebody else in the space. Like, I think just, this is a close-knit community of folks, which is one of the reasons why I really love it. And, you know, people should just, I think people can behave that way.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, that's what you guys are solving with Breezeway, is a communication gap. So,
yeah, I think that's right. In general, though, you know, I think in the industry, I think another pet peeve would be, I would like people to be, you know, it's important for people to stay open-minded. I think that the majority of the industry really does a nice job, I mean it, embracing technology. Yeah. But they have to do it and think about, and you guys see this all the time, like the realities of trying to serve this industry with great solutions. It can be challenging, you know. We all need a little understanding back and forth to help reach our goals.
What fictional character do you identify with the most?
That's incredible. That's incredible. Anchorman. I mean, I don't know.
That's awesome.
That's a really good question.
It's like think on your feet and
yeah, I guess that's
that's a good one.
Yeah, and although I can't remember his name right now, he says it all the time. Now I can't remember
Ron Burgundy.
Oh, it's Ron Burgundy. Yeah. How could I forget?
We're both Ron Burgundy fans. So.
Step Brothers was on the other day, and I just had to watch some of it. It was hysterical.
So yeah. you're Will Ferrell, man. Then Will Ferrell.
Oh, he's great. He's great. Yeah. And you should listen to. I was on a plane. I guess it must have been more than a year ago. And listening to the Dax Shepard Armchair. Podcast.
Okay.
Which if you haven't listened to it, it's really good. And he had Will Ferrell on, and you know, after you listen to him chat like out of character, you know, you just have an even deeper appreciation for him. He's just like such a great guy.
That's cool. I always quote that. I have many leather bound books. My apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh man. Well, one more fun question. Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
Oh, wow. 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck. I think I'd take the 100 duck-sized horses. Yeah. Right? One horse-sized duck. I mean, that's just frightening.
Yeah, that would be pretty scary.
Right. Right.
Ducks are a little scary, right? When you're walking down the street, I don't know if you guys have.
You never know what's in their heads.
Canadian geese are frightening.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't really like them. You don't know what they're gonna do. They can move quickly. Sort of. They've got long necks. They can reach out at you. Imagine if that thing was bigger than you were. It would be really scary.
Right. Right.
Little tiny horses, you could sort of push them around a little bit. Maybe they'd nip at you. It doesn't sound that bad.
Give them
a, that'd be more of just an annoyance.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. A true scare.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm terrified of chickens. I don't know why. It's a completely irrational fear, but completely terrified.
I understand that. I can see that. Little beaks. Those beaks.
Yeah, same thing. Unpredictability. Like, you don't know what they're going to do. You just don't.
Yeah, and chickens, sharp feet, right? I mean, then you've got, they've got claws. They can, you know, even worse than ducks.
Yeah.
Right, right. Oh, man. Well, switching gears real quick, tell us about Elevate. I mean, that was your inaugural summit, right? I mean, that was pretty big news for you guys. So how'd it go? And then what made it successful?
Yeah, I thought it was, thanks. It was good. We wanted to do something, and we were thinking about doing something in the fall. We didn't know whether or not everyone was totally Zoomed out or, you know, from virtual conferences. And then we saw that, you know, through November, December, January, there kind of was a lull in any virtual activity anyway. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to put together an event that was really focused on just property operations. And that alone is a pretty broad, you know, mandate. It covers a lot, covers a tremendous amount of ground. And so it felt like we could focus on that. We could bring together a group of our customers in the industry and partners and folks that we know who could really facilitate. You know, our goal was to facilitate an approachable, like, direct conversation that mm-hmm. was useful. It's the first time we've done it. I thought it came out really, really well. I'm proud of the team and how they did it. It's not easy to do. I have so much respect for a lot of our software partners who put on these conferences. Amy mm-hmm. Highnote, who does this often. You know, it's not easy to put together a conference. But our goal was really to say, like, hey, let's pick discrete topics, try to make it approachable, try to make sure there's some kernels and nuggets of takeaways that people can really use in their business. And I think it was a success.
Nice.
That's awesome.
And we'll keep doing it. I think that'll be our first one, but I think we will definitely continue to do it because I think it's just, I thought of this yesterday, or we were talking about it yesterday. I think it's fascinating. You guys brought this up a little earlier, which was like vacation rentals getting closer and closer to hotels, vacation rentals either being ahead or behind with technology for hotels. And that's a popular topic in our industry.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of talking about it a lot as well. And then I was starting to think, like, this is really interesting. Like, just how much do we actually want to be like hotels?
Right.
Yeah, and like, where are we going to draw the line? And like, cause there is a line. And at some point, vacation rentals don't want to be any more like hotels. They want to be different, and they are different, and they have unique, it is not alternative accommodation. It's a real meaningful, ever growing segment of the travel landscape. And it has its own definition, it has its own parameters. And I think we need to treat it that way and, you know, be mindful of how it's like a hotel and be mindful of exactly how it isn't.
Yeah. Well, I think, said.
I think where the hotels have gotten people is we talked about expectations and how they, I mean, you know what you're going to get when you, I mean, generally when you go into a hotel, you know what the process is going to be and it's very predictable. And so maybe even lining out some of those expectations, you know, and collecting data around what consumers want, what vacation rental managers want, or the vacationers would be helpful. Speaking of data, I know you guys did an annual vacation rental property operations survey. That was a mouthful. That was
a mouthful. Yeah.
VRPOS.
Yeah, let's acronym that real quick. AVRPOS. You guys did that. If there was any sort of data that stood out to you, what was the most important thing from that survey that you guys found?
Yeah, I think maybe a couple things. One, maybe I'll start first on the traveler side, which isn't too much of a surprise, but I think it's important that it'll be really interesting. Again, we'll see this, you know, next year, how this has maintained itself, but you know, we asked folks on the traveler side, what are the most important considerations when booking a vacation rental?
Yeah.
And cleanliness and safety was the number one consideration above location, price, and amenities. And I don't think that's very surprising, but it's going to be really interesting to see how that continues to have some of these changes. Are some of these changes sort of stuck in our consciousness?
Right.
Or does it sort of drift back and we're like, oh, you know what? I'm all about price. Like, I'm looking for the best deal. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, you know, overnight.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's interesting too. Like, if you had like the past 6 years worth of data and trying to line graph that out, like, I bet you the cleanliness one jumped up quite a bit this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. And I also think that, like, I don't think it's going to drift that low. I'm sure it will go down a little bit, but I don't think it's really going to drift that low. Also because it's a proxy for the rest of the experience. It's a proxy for the professionalism of the rest of the experience. Right. I thought it was interesting, you know, hearing from the folks at Newman Daily at the Elevate conference about, you know, during COVID or when people resumed travel, their radar was so high on the cleanliness. You know, they had to make sure that pots and pans didn't have scratches or they, things that they probably would have, things that would have been let go before were now taken as signals for how clean, how well prepared the property was and that level of attention to detail. So, you know, I think guest expectations going up, guest tolerance going up, that makes a big difference. And I think one other thing coming out of the survey was, you know, 71% of managers think that these elevated service standards are indefinite, sort of thinking like, you know, there's no going back. And I tend to believe that as well, that, you know, I'm trying to think of a good analogy. Sometimes I'm good at them, sometimes I'm bad. Right now I classify myself as bad. But, you know, I think without an analogy, just to say it, you know, when a service standard goes up, I mean, so yeah, like if Amazon all of a sudden takes away Prime delivery and says, oh yeah, you know, Prime isn't 2 days, it's 4 days. Yeah, everybody's gonna
be
like,
an uproar.
Yeah, everybody's like, what? You used to do this in, you used to do this in 2 days. Like, why does it take 4 days now?
Right.
And it's like 6 minute abs versus 7 minute abs. So I think that, you know, this concept of elevated standards, it's not going to go down. I think it's here to stay. And I think it's just another sort of change in the market that managers have to adopt it.
I'm still on the 6 versus 7 minute abs.
I know.
That was good. That was good. Good reference.
I'm just curious about what do you think? I think that vacation rental managers are going to win as far as when it comes to flexibility and being able to uphold those standards. I think that's probably something where some of the other forms of like staying like hotels and different things like that, I think that might be something where they kind of fall short. But maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I just feel like the vacation rental managers are flexible enough. We've seen enough of a good adoption rate to just, okay, this is what we're doing now and we've got to make it happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that as an industry, we have to focus on the professionals and the responsible operators and being professional. You know, we all know the really great companies who are awesome at this, and they do a fantastic job, and they have for a long time, right? They were doing it pre-COVID. They've been doing it for decades. And I think those companies will continue to shine. I think as an industry, though, it's going to be very interesting, right? Like, if you want to keep that market share that you gained from hotels in 2020, there's got to be a little bit of pampering and a continued focus on service, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I do think people want that. They want that mixture of experience. And now I'm not saying they want their room. Yeah, they don't want their room cleaned every day. They probably may not even need mid-stay cleans, but they do want hospitality level attention and service. Because otherwise, you know, people will shift a little back to, they'll shift back to hotels. And I think, Paul, you said it, you know, they also want that predictability. You have to deliver that predictability to make sure that like the experience is really good. Nobody wants to be going on vacation and wondering like what they're going to get when they show up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to.
Or a counterpoint on that one is sometimes that's the fun of the experience. And that's why vacation rentals are growing. Cause you know, you see, you can book a spectacular place on Airbnb, right. And VRBO, but you never really know until you show up and you pull up to the property and you open the door and then you go, wow, this is spectacular. So yeah, it's a bit of both of that, you know, it's that excitement of a vacation rental. Whereas if I go to the Hilton and I'm going to open the door and it's going to be a Hilton room, whoop-de-doo.
Totally. Yeah. As long as the excitement is in the positive and you're not showing up and it's like escape the room, you know,
right.
You know, nobody wants the, I think you're totally right though. That's a really interesting point, which is if you can make sure that you can capture that positive excitement and that positive surprise, that's delight, right? When you show up and you open the door and it's even better than you thought it could be, that is a delight. That is a delightful experience, which we're all trying to do for our customers. Nice. But pulling that off while also making sure the people aren't anxious and like, you know, really curious about their trip before they show up. That's hard to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So closing up, give us your, what's next for Breezeway? Like, what do you have in the pipeline? Anything hush hush or something you can disclose? That would be cool.
Yeah, we've got some cool, we do have some cool stuff. I think that, you know, operations is a broad, it's a broad subject to sort of take on. And I think it's also a deep one. In my opinion, you know, we're doing a very good job helping our customers, but there's so much more that we can do. And I think that that level of automation, the level of sort of tying the tools and the features together, helping people with real insights, helping them change the way that their business is run for the positive. People can expect a lot more out of Breezeway over the course of the next year and thereafter as we continue to, you know, we're not even close to taking our foot off the gas from a development standpoint.
That's awesome.
Well, I think that pretty much concludes us for today. I'll let Jeremy go first. Tell us how we can contact you or how everybody can contact you.
Sure.
Get some info and start the path.
Yeah, sure. Of course. You know, happy to chat and reach out. Happy to chat with folks and listeners, people in the industry, not just about Breezeway, about operations. Love to share insights and hear how your business is running or challenges that you're having, whether or not, you know, Breezeway can help or not. And so feel free to reach out to me. My email direct is Jeremiah, Jeremiah at breezeway.io. And you know, we're always here and happy to chat with folks.
Jeremy, thanks for being on our little podcast.
Love it. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Paul, sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Nope. That was it.
Oh, okay. Well, that was it. Well, yeah. Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for letting us drill you on some questions, as crazy as they may be.
No, I think that's great. Hopefully you guys liked it. And I stayed close enough to the mic. I drifted a little bit, but tried to get myself back there.
You're good. If anyone has any questions for us, you can find us on Facebook at Intercoastal Net Designs, Twitter at Intercoastal, or you can email us your questions or your comments or your suggestions at podcast@icoastalnet.com. Again, Jeremy, thanks so much. And we really had a good time. It was awesome.
Yeah, same.
Good stuff.
Great. Good stuff, guys.
All right, guys. We will talk to you next time. Thanks so much.